This episode is sponsored by the NHS.
Now, a hot topic on our NetMums forum is the COVID-19 vaccine and whether it's okay for pregnant women to have it.
Lots of you are asking for the facts, and that's something we've got plenty of.
For example, here's one. Between May and October last year, 96% of pregnant women who were admitted to hospital with COVID-19 symptoms were unvaccinated. You can book your vaccine online or find a walk-in centre at nhs.uk/COVID vaccination.
Now, on with the show.
You're listening to Sweat, Snot and Tears, brought to you by NetMums. I'm Annie O'Leary.
And I'm Wendy Gollidge. And together we talk about all of this week's sweaty, snotty and tearful parenting moments.
With guests who are far more interesting than we are.
On this week's show...
I knew I couldn't stop, but I didn't know what that meant. And I couldn't ask for help because I was too ashamed to admit it. I'm too scared of everybody knowing, which they would do. I had reluctant myself to just not be here.
But before all of that, welcome everyone to another episode of Sweat, Snot and Tears. We're so glad to have you with us, and we're very glad to have today's guest with us because she is extra special, isn't she, Wendell?
Oh, she is, for lots of reasons. So I reckon the main reason is that this person, I nearly said her name then, was our first ever guest.
Don't give it away.
Don't give away the secret. She was a first ever guest and she was so bloody brilliant that we fell in love with her.
We did, and we wanted her to be our guest every week, but she had her own life. How dare she? Now, she's been on a bit of a journey since we last spoke to her in the summer of 2020, which feels like 8 million light years away. But you know what? Haven't we all? So I want you all to welcome her back warmly and give her a really loud cheer. If you're driving the car, out on a run, walking the dog, lying in the bath, giving birth, breastfeeding, I want to hear that roar. Welcome, Michelle Heaton. How are you?
Oh, thank you. I'm blushing. Aww. Anybody who can't see me, I'm blushing. Thank you so much. That just brought back memories, obviously, because it was pre-COVID and we were in a studio. And I remember talking a lot about going for a drink afterwards or having a drink there with you girls. Do you remember that?
Oh, yes, we remember that. But it was like 10 in the morning. It was an inappropriate time to go for a drink at the time.
Yeah, I should say, hi, I'm Michelle and I'm an alcoholic. That would explain my conversation at 10 in the morning back then.
You sound very comfortable saying that. Does it feel just easy, just part of you now? Just, yeah, another bit of who I am, just like all the other bits.
Yeah. I mean, it's quite a big bit because this big bit would have killed me, you know, if I had continued down that path. Do you know, at the beginning, at the start, I mean, anybody who knows anything about addiction knows that we can't admit we have a problem, right? So to admit the words alcoholic, I never said those words until maybe about 2 or 3 weeks into my therapy in
wow,
the Priory.
Wow, really?
I just couldn't say it because you know that it's such a stigma.
Too big.
It was just too much. And then I'm one of those. I am that. And I couldn't say it. And it took a while for me to acknowledge that I was, even though I knew I was ticking all these boxes. I couldn't put it down. You know, all of the things that what you see on paper that makes an alcoholic, when you are, you don't think you are because you look at the reasons why you're not that. And then it was a while before I was comfortable saying it. But then I've got word from it now. I say it straight away. We go to restaurants because I'm really good. I'm free from any obsession over drink or drugs. And I sit down and go, would you like a drink? And I'll say, no, thank you, I'm an alcoholic. And I either get met with a nervous laugh or, oh, you can have one.
Really? Or, do people say that? That's so bloody irresponsible.
Even friends. But it's because they don't know what it is. I never knew what it is because I thought I could stop, right? So I totally understand people saying, why can't you just stop, or can you just have one? Because there's not enough information, and they don't necessarily need to go find it because they're not the one with the problem. It was me. But more than often, the interesting thing is that I get met with, so am I.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah. Or my mum suffered. She wasn't so lucky. She's not with us anymore. And the list can go on. I have to say, I'd say 90% of people who I meet first time and I say who I am and what I am is met with, somebody's in their life who has it or they have it.
Isn't that fascinating?
Yeah, it really is. It's like when you're pregnant, all of a sudden you see pregnancy everywhere.
Yes.
You know? Or if your kid's being naughty at school, you get all loads of messages from the mum saying their kid is. It's like law of attraction almost. But on my mind, my eyes were so shut off from that, that I never heard anybody say those words then. But now I'm so open.
Yeah. Well, and I guess we shouldn't expect everyone we meet to be leading rosy, beautiful, Mary Poppins style lives. Of course, everyone's got the struggles or knows someone who's got a struggle or is related to someone who's got a struggle. In a way, is it quite nice to connect with people in a way?
It's amazing. I mean, I won't go too much into this 12 steps program and stuff, but that's what I follow. And I do meetings. I just finished one this morning, actually. I led a meeting in gratitude. And just that, you know, sometimes I can't be bothered, or I'm like, I'm good today, I don't need a meeting. And that's when I know I need to go to keep what I've got. But the connection that you have with people and the connection that they give you, I learn something new about myself every single day. And so that's with connection. But, you know, the reality is that nobody has Mary Poppins lives. Like, even if I didn't have addictions in my present, they're kidding themselves. I really get frustrated about the image that somebody's life is perfect. Nobody's perfect, because life turns up.
Yeah, life gets... I've got a lovely friend who says life gets lifey.
Oh, that's good.
And what about you? Now that the turbulence is slowly settling down, what are you up to?
I'm trying to get the wheels in motion for my breast reconstruction to be reconstructed, but I have no information on that at the minute. So that's just something that we're going to have to do at some point. I have got loads of Liberty X gigs coming up, and I'm so looking forward to it. I mean, it's been a long 2 years without any income as well, right? You know, from a two-work parent, income-bringing family living in a very expensive area, it's been really tough. So not only am I looking forward to provide for the family, I get to do what I love. And we've got about 30 dates, one of which is a bit of a tour later on this year. So me and the girls are so looking forward to that. And so I'm in the gym a lot. I've got my mojo back. I just look forward to every day waking up without that hangover, without the shame and the guilt and the remorse of drinking or using. And it's just a different life, better than it was before. And so I'm taking care of my body. I'm enjoying life, everything in moderation. I like my food. And me and my husband, Hugh, we set up 5 years ago a fitness business, and we're now doing it. And, you know, in reality, it was me holding everything back because I was in that mess. And so hopefully in the next month or two, we'll announce it's being live, but we're working really hard on it together. It's called Mission Possible Wellness, and I've been teasing it on my Instagrams with the hashtag Everything's Possible. So it'll be just like, do you know what I mean? I am everyday folk. I can go up and down in my weights. I just want to feel healthy. I want to be able to have the energy to play with my kids. I don't want to go and win any, bodybuilding competitions. So Hugh's side of it would be more fitness, physique related. Right. We just want to bring the joy of exercise and wellness and nutrition, and maybe any other help down the line with guest speakers and things coming in, like virtually and maybe in person at our gym. And that's what we're building now. So it's really exciting. It's been a long time coming. And we're hoping this is going to be our baby that we grow for years to come.
Love it. Now, back to the COVID-19 vaccine. We want everyone to have a healthy pregnancy, but unfortunately, we know that being pregnant puts you at greater risk of getting seriously ill with COVID-19.
And sadly, that's not all. Getting COVID in pregnancy could also cause complications, including your baby being born prematurely. The best way to protect yourself and your baby is by having the COVID-19 jab.
The good news is you don't need to wait until your baby arrives to have your vaccine or booster. It's safe to have at any stage of your pregnancy. You can book in at nhs.uk /COVID vaccination.
Now, on with the show.
So one of the things I'm intrigued by, Michelle, is that you said at the top of the pod that you were a couple of weeks into rehab or therapy before you could say, I'm an alcoholic, which you said very confidently and matter-of-factly to me and Wend, which is great. So what was it that made you go and get help then, if it took you a few weeks to sort of get your head around saying it out loud?
Couple of things. I recognized 4 months previous to the Priory that I couldn't stop because it was the first time I tried to really stop. Lots of empty promises over the years, thinking I could stop at any point, but I didn't want to. And then when I got told I was rushed into hospital over that Christmas, I lost Panto because of it. I really did want to stop, but I realized I couldn't. And I didn't know why. And then I sat in 4 months of hell, but just couldn't, because I didn't know what I was an addict. I knew I couldn't stop, but I didn't know what that meant. And I couldn't ask for help because I was too ashamed to admit it. I'm too scared of everybody knowing, which they would do. I had reluctant myself to just not be here. I wasn't on the verge of committing anything bad, but I was resigned to the fact that this is my life. This is it. And then I saw Katie Price, my very, very good friend. And
yes,
she had something I didn't, which was sobriety at that time. And I just said, I want what you got. I realized that I really didn't want to be here like this anymore because I saw somebody who could do it. And then and my husband had had enough. I was out the house. I was staying at a friend's house. He hadn't chucked me out, but I didn't want to be there because I couldn't continue to drink the way that I was. All my friends had given up on me. I couldn't remember the last time the kids wanted to give me a hug. I was done. Like, so that was like, they call it the rock bottom. Some people's rock bottom could be something else. Some people don't need the rock bottom to realize that they're an addict. My journey, my story is that I had to reach that rock bottom of about to die and just lost pretty much everything. And then I asked for help. And then collectively with my husband, a few friends, 48 hours later, I'm in the Priory and I can't really remember a lot. I abstained from alcohol for 24 hours before I went in there because I was done. And then on like the literally the split second before I walked out my friend's door to go to the Priory, I didn't know why, and I now know why, I had to drink. I couldn't stop. So I couldn't stop. I had to drink. So I drank the morning before I went to the Priory. And the heartbreaking thing is that her son, who was 10, 11 at the time, said, Auntie Misha, you're not supposed to be doing that. I mean, what an idiot. But no buts. No buts.
No, what a human. What a human. And humans make mistakes, hey?
Well, I made a lot of them, yeah. A lot of mistakes. And, you know, still not knowing anything about addictions or what I had. I mean, if somebody said to me years ago, it's a disease, I can't stop, I'd be like, what a load of, you know, like whatever, just stop drinking. You know, you don't need to drink that much. It isn't that easy. It's not like that. If you are an addict of whatever it is, you can't stop. And the only way is to abstain with the program. The program, if I drop the program, which is either my steps or my big butt, I've got a sponsor. I am a sponsor for 4 women. Wow. If I drop it, yeah, it's a lot of work.
You must be bloody busy. I was going to say, how do you even breathe or eat?
Because step 12, right, is literally to keep it, you've got to give it away.
How does that work? I don't get it. I don't get it. I don't get it.
So whatever I've learned from my sponsor in completing the 12 steps, I have to give it away and share it. Otherwise, I won't keep it.
But why will it stop you keeping it?
Because my mind won't be focused. I won't be in the program. The program's like a big circle. I'm not cured. I'm an alcoholic. I am not a recovered alcoholic. A lot of people use that word and that's fine. But I will die an alcoholic, but I'm not going to die in alcoholism.
So are we coming up to like 9 months in recovery? Is that about right?
I'm 9 months, 1 week.
Yay! Woo! Well done you. But that is a flipping turnaround, lady. How?
Yeah.
Like, what's the What was the magic ingredient? What's the secret? If there's any other parent listening to this.
I know, but it's that, unless you're in the program, right? It sounds like a cult, but it's not. It is the meetings. It's AA or CA or whatever your affiliation might be, and the steps. And I have to believe that there's something looking after me. So it's the belief that there's a higher power. Now, I'm not religious. This is not a cult. I am not a believer in any religion, but I have to believe that there's a power greater than me because I couldn't stop. So I couldn't stop.
Well, I guess it's healthy for everyone to realise that they're not the centre of the universe, right?
I think what it is that it's not about that. In recovery, addictions, it's just I could not do what my higher power does for me. Because I couldn't stop. My kids couldn't stop me. Losing my kids, my health, everything. And I couldn't stop until I came to believe that something else could help me. And that's where you open your mind. And there isn't like an epiphany moment. There's no white spark in the cloud, in the sky. You don't get faced with an angel. I was expecting all of that, but it doesn't quite work like that. It's just the obsession goes. So as soon as the obsession goes, you know you've had it.
I was going to say, what was the moment where you thought, I've turned a corner. I've turned a bloody corner.
I've got a really good example here. So it was our third gig with the Liberty X Girls after In Sobriety. And the first couple were a bit iffy. You know, there's alcohol around, but the girls didn't bring it into the room. They didn't drink. I didn't ask them not to. They're just so gorgeous to me.
That's sweet of them.
They're just epic. And then we were at a gig, a gig in, I don't know, where was it? Cornwall. And it was a midnight gig with loads of fireworks and everybody had body paint on them. And it was just euphoria everywhere. But natural, right? Natural highs. And I remember that everybody was drunk before we even got there. And I said to the girls, if you want a drink, I'm good. And I wasn't sure if I was good, but I wanted them to enjoy themselves after we had been on stage. And I walked into the dressing room before we went on stage and there was alcohol in the room. Now, we had asked them not to be, but it is what it is. And I remember looking and my friend Fats and Small was on stage, Ben and Rick Live and that, and the music was pumping. It was like there was no way I wouldn't have drank or used in that environment. I've never not. And I walked in the dressing room, saw it, admired the beautiful bottle of rosé. I thought, that looks nice. Picked myself up a Red Bull and drank that. And I didn't have the obsession to drink it. I wasn't staring at it. I didn't think about it. I just thought how absolutely amazing it was that I grabbed the Red Bull. And we did the gig and then we danced outside at the front for 45 minutes to the DJ set on maybe a little bit too many Red Bulls. But I Jess and Kelly looked at me, the fireworks were going off. So this was quite a cool moment, right? And there was thousands of people we just performed to, and it was one of the first gigs to come back open there because COVID. And they hugged me and cried with me. And sorry. They didn't need to say anything. They didn't need to say any words. But Kel and Jess said that they were so proud of me. And then Kelly looked at me and she said, is it time to go back to the hotel? I said, yeah, let's go now. And Jess stayed. And then I left my phone in the dressing room. And then she got back 2 hours later with my phone. So I had to stay up. But all of that didn't matter because I wasn't jealous that I wasn't there. I went back and I got cheesy chips.
Oh, that sounds good.
And I managed to watch a film and have a bath and just take care of myself. You know, there was times when I didn't wash for weeks. And that was the harsh reality of this disease. But that was my moment. And I look back at that. And I've learned from that. I learned boundaries to put in place when I go out to events. But that was about 6 months ago, that.
So really early on in your process, actually, 6 months ago is only 3 months sober. That's really soon to be going to a gig. And I guess that's your job. So you have to go to gigs. But it's a bigger test then maybe, God, it just feels like such a big test for you to have to do that 3 months in. Well, yeah, bloody it was done. It's unbelievable.
Thank you. It's hard because faced with moments where you're testing yourself, it's not recommended you know. It's just that it was my work.
It just happened. Yeah.
It just happened. So it was just my line of work that I had to be in that situation. The kids know everything. If they ask a question, I tell them. In fairness, I mean, it's really difficult to hide. When I was in the primary, one of the mums of school had texted me. We only allowed our phone for like an hour a day. And she said, oh, my God, I had no idea. My daughter's just told me. And I'm like, okay, because I never looked at social media when I was in there. My manager told me not to, but it was everywhere. I found out when I came out, they knew I was in before I was even in. So I actually did not see any social media at all, but it was obviously everywhere. And the daughter got told by Faith. So Faith went to school and said to everyone in class, mummy's allergic to wine, so if your mummy comes round, she can't bring Prosecco anymore. It's only coffee.
Bless Faith.
Oh, that's so cute.
Yeah. So that's what she does in general. Even now, we've got the supermarket, and I look at the 0.0 Prosecco over for Christmas, and she's getting the bottle, and she's looking at it. And in fairness, she pointed out on one of them was 0.5, not 0.05. I was like, thank you so much. That is why you're my daughter. And she's my little bodyguard. How has it affected her? She had to grow up really quickly, I suppose. And that's unfortunate. But all I can do is be this better mum now, which I really am. It's not too late. It's never too late. You know, no matter how old your kids are, if you are suffering from this disease, it's never too late. They're never too young. They're never too old to get help. Because kids are so forgiving. I never had to say sorry to the kids because my living amends, the way that I am sober every day and present.
Living amends.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's interesting because when we met you last, you were so together, but you were so vulnerable. You were really tearful. You walked in and you looked stunning and you were with it and you were talking and then you just had a cry and you were just not... We were like, we just want to look after her.
I remember walking out, it was a sunny day, and we turned left, walked down the street, and I said, there's something really vulnerable about her. I just want to protect her. And you were like, oh my God, I completely agree.
And we were like, we wish we could have gone to the pub with her because I think she needs a chat. And actually, no, that would have been the worst thing we could have done. But you were just...
Oh yeah. No. Do you know what's really weird is that vulnerable has been the word that everybody's used. And it was something that I didn't acknowledge at all because I'm a sensitive person and I do cry a lot, but crying is good now. So today, if I cry in advert, it's because I'm a sensitive little pig and I'm eating popcorn. And I'm like, oh my God, that puppy just loved it. You know?
Yeah.
But just to be so emotionally drained is the best word I was back then. I had masks on. I turned up. I mean, apart from that panto, I never let anybody down, but I was letting myself down.
Yeah, no, I would have described you as incredibly professional. Absolutely. You were 100% there.
I was functioning. I didn't, you know, I loved working. I loved meeting people. But I was suffering inside, obviously. And that was showing. And so only now I can look back and recognize that. But you know, the word vulnerable has been met by everybody who I've worked with, Lorraine and that, since coming into sobriety, that I was very vulnerable at a lot of times.
But we did also have a bit of a laugh that day because of course. At the time, ladies, gentlemen, at the time, Michelle was the face of a vaginal tightening device and we were in hysterics about this. Are you still the face of said vaginal? I thought you were looking around to go and get it then. Jesus Christ.
No, because
yeah. Sit down, you're scaring me, Michelle. No. She's gone what running off for something.
Yeah, but what'll make you laugh though? Right, okay, I won't say the brand name. Although they probably like it, but now I'm in partnership-ish for like some grid posts. You know how it works.
Yeah.
I don't get the TOWIE fee, unfortunately. I just get like normal mum fee for these.
Ooh.
Am I allowed to say what you've just shown us?
Well, I suppose so. Yeah, the lover plug.
Always discreet from Michelle Heaton.
Yeah. Incontinence pads.
There we go, sorted.
So I'm not. So with the vaginal dryness, has came incontinence. No. But there you go. But this is all real life. Like, I'm 42. I am in menopause for 8 years now, and you know, my body aged very, very quickly, very early on. So a lot of women who are reaching 42 now will be starting to do, you know, get into perimenopause, menopause, you know, starting to develop symptoms that I've had for 8 years. And you know, in fairness, both of them two products were products that I said yes to because it was something I had been affected by. You know, I'm not here promoting vodka anymore, that's for sure.
Well, I'm glad you've just stayed true to that region of our bodies.
That region down below.
I'll always think of you.
Oh, God. Jesus.
Right, final question. Now, we usually ask, as we asked you last time, to sing us your lullaby. But today, I think we're going to ask you to sing a different song. Michelle Heaton, sing us your recovery song.
Ah, like make it up.
Sing us your song that makes you feel good and energized and positive and one day at a time and living amends and all of it.
Oh, gosh. Oh, my God.
Or sing us your vaginal tightening song. We don't really mind.
Yeah, or sing us a song about your vagina. It's up to you, really.
Okay, no,
just tell us what it's about, or it could be a bit awkward.
Okay. I am brave, I am bruised, I am who I'm meant to be. This is me.
Woo! Yay! You're amazing, you Michelle. We love you.
Oh, that was lovely. It's so nice to see you again.
Thank you, girl.
Yeah, and it's so good to see you fighting fit and taking on the world. I love it, love it, love it.
Thank you for joining us.
More than welcome. Thank you.
Okay, well, keep up the good work.
Have a good day.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.